Deep in the farthest recesses of the most distant jungle lies a city. A city populated by the most mysterious, terrifying, and downright grotesque denizens ever seen by mortal eye. Here, in the darkened corners of this cavernous locale, sits an ordinary, average brick building with an innocuous, ordinary, average blinking neon sign which reads, On Air. It is here where each week, Seth Breedlove and Mark Matzke convene to discuss the greatest mysteries the world has ever known. Now, zip up your leather pants, slap on the clown paint, and don't forget to eat something light as we begin our journey through Monsteropolis.
This is Monsteropolis, a show about monsters, anomalies, and legends. I am one of your hosts. My name is Seth Breedlove. I'm joined by my pal, Mark Matzke.
What's up?
What's up? This is the official podcast of Small Town Monsters. And at the beginning of the show, so I don't forget and do it in the middle of the show, coming up July 19th, Mark and I will be at the Black Forge Coffee House in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. We're going to be talking about Chestnut Ridge High Strangeness. And essentially, it's going to be kind of a live version of this show with a little bit of STM flair thrown in.
A little stand up.
I'm going to wear buttons.
Little. We'll be pounding black coffee.
Yeah, actually, that's probably true. It's a fright. You know what? I'm actually really looking forward to this because I don't know that we've ever, I don't think we've really done an event like this other than maybe when we did the library thing. But mm-hmm. I think it'd be fun if we could roll down there together to swing by Permani Brothers afterward.
Oh.
And get dinner and just enjoy a Friday night of conspiracies and monsters on the Chestnut Ridge in Pittsburgh.
If we make it that long.
If we make it back.
For the
black helicopter morphs out of a cow somewhere and comes and gets us. This week This week we're talking about historical monsters part two. We did this a little weird. I could probably still do this, but now we're just gonna leave it.
Do it our way.
This is a sequel to historical monsters part one, which we did just a few weeks ago. We're gonna pick back up the train of thought of monster reports that predate, say, like the 1950s.
Mm-hmm.
I'm saying 1950 because the one I have in front of me is like 1940
I think,
or something like that. Wait, this is July 1915.
Oh.
But I think I have some stuff that 1940. Yeah. We'll see. I do because I want to talk about phantom kangaroos. We're going to just kind of go through some historical reports of monsters that we are digging on. I'm going to start us off with a report. I actually found this on a website, grayforces.tumblr.com. So this was not through my usual newspaper archival research. So props to the writer or researcher who found this. This is in a post entitled The U-28C Monster. And there's actually a illustration there.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, it's a giant, looks like a giant crocodile.
Yeah.
The German U-28. The German U-boat U-28 was patrolling the waters off the coast of County Cork, Ireland, when it encountered and torpedoed the British steamer Iberian. The incident and the strangeness that followed was detailed by Commander Frere George G. von Forstner in his captain's log. So this is directly from this man's captain's log. On July 30th, 1915, our U-28 torpedoed the British steamer Iberian, which was carrying a rich cargo across the North Atlantic. The steamer sank so swiftly that its bow stuck up almost vertically into the air. Moments later, the hull of the Iberian disappeared. The wreckage remained beneath the water for approximately 25 seconds at a depth that was clearly impossible to assess, when suddenly there was a violent explosion which shot pieces of debris, among them a gigantic aquatic animal, out of the water to a height of approximately 80 feet. At that moment, I had with me in the conning tower six of my officers of the watch, including the chief engineer, the navigator, and the helmsman. Simultaneously, we all drew one another's attention to this wonder of the seas, which was writhing and struggling among the debris. We were unable to identify the creature, but all of us agreed that it resembled an aquatic crocodile, which was about 60 feet long, with four limbs resembling large webbed feet, a long pointed tail, and a head which also tapered to a point. Unfortunately, we were not able to take a photograph, for the animal sank out of sight after 10 or 15 seconds. The article goes on, the creature described most closely resembles both the prehistoric sea reptiles known as Mosasaurus, and the Thalatosuchians. Yeah.
Yeah.
Ocean-dwelling, slender-nosed crocodiles. However, both of these species became extinct millions of years ago. Mosasaurus could have reached the 60-foot length described by the captain, but the other one topped off around 35 feet. On September 2nd, 1917, the U-28 was sunk by the British steamer SS Olive Branch, killing most eyewitnesses to the sighting. The men who survived continued to stand behind their tale of the gigantic sea creature they catapulted into the sky above the North Atlantic, but no evidence proving their story was ever found. That's a good one.
That is a good one.
I like that one.
And that's one of the cool things about these ocean stories is that we really don't know what's beneath the surface or what can come up from deeply beneath. That's really cool. That's a great story.
Giant sea crocodile.
Yeah.
Sailing through the air.
Poor thing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Man.
Just innocently playing around and next thing you know.
Wrong place, wrong time.
Yeah. What do you got?
Well, I was looking at the real old stories again from Bigfoot Casebook, and there's this little subgenre of wild children. You know, we always talk about wild men, but like here's, for example, in the late 1830s, there were reports of a wild child around Fish Lake in Indiana, 4 feet tall and with a covering of chestnut hair. It was often seen among the sand hills near the lake, as well as swimming in the water. It ran very fast and could not be caught and made awful yelling and whining noises. And there's another one in the 1830s farther east in Pennsylvania. Child-sized hairy creatures were seen on at least two occasions, as this report describes. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but it says, in the southwestern part of Bridgewater, he represented the animal as we have it through a third person as having the appearance of a child 7 or 8 years old. Though somewhat slimmer and covered entirely in hair, he saw it while picking berries, walking toward him, whistling like a person. After recovering from his fright, he's said to have pursued it, but it ran off with such speed, whistling as it went, that he could not catch it. He said it ran like the devil and continued to call it after that name. The same or similar-looking animal was seen in Silver Lake Township about 2 weeks since by a boy some 16 years old. We had the story from the father of the boy in his absence and afterward from the boy himself. The boy was sent to work in the backwoods near the New York state line. He took with him a gun, was told by his father to shoot anything he might see, except persons or cattle. After working a while, he heard some person, a little brother he supposed, coming toward him whistling quite merrily. It came within a few rods of him and stopped. He said it looked like a human being covered with black hair about the size of his brother, who was 6 or 7 years old. His gun was some little distance off. He was very much frightened. He, however, got his gun and shot at the animal, but trembled so that he could not hold it still. The strange animal, just as the gun went off, stepped behind a tree and then ran off whistling as before. The father said the boy came home very much frightened and that a number of times during the afternoon when thinking about the animal he had seen would, to use the man's own words, burst out crying. And I like that idea of the smaller stature.
Well, there's also wild women reports that I've come across when I've been doing research, and I think one of them was Maslin, one of the wild woman reports.
No kidding.
Yeah, yeah. But I have found wild child. That is a common that's a common thing.
And I looked up where Fish Lake in Indiana is, and it's sort of in the northwestern section of the state, which seems like a extremely odd place for a little hairy boy.
It was the same back then, though?
Yeah, essentially. I mean, it's that part of the state is farms, you know, fields. And the thing, you know, there's creeks and so forth, so that's not out of the realm of possibility. Just it's not downstate like, you know, Indiana is a lot like Illinois in the sense that going from changes, north to south, it's quite different.
See, it's Ohio that's weird like that, because I'm sure maybe from a topography standpoint, things were similar back then, but the terrain itself and the forested areas have shifted somewhat. Where northern Ohio was once, like, there was that great black swamp that we've always talked about, but also the up near the lake was much more forested than it is today, and it was way less inhabited. So all those reports from like Sandusky from the 30s and stuff like Norwalk and all that's it makes sense. The other thing that's changed, did I ever show you the rainfall map that I looked at once for Ohio, where the rainfall has even changed? There used to be more rainfall in the northern part of the state. And if you look at where the most rainfall is in the state of Ohio, the sightings in those areas match up with the rainfall report. So if it's like a place where there's a lot of rain, that's where Shocton gets a lot of rain. And Shocton area is kind of known for Bigfoot reports. Down into Wayne National Forest and all that, there's a lot of rainfall down there. And then there's a lot of reports from those areas.
Yeah. It's pretty stunning, too, to like look at pictures of the Salt Fork area when the park was forming, because it had been clear cut.
Oh, wow.
You know, and like the sign at the entryway, there's a picture that I saw around that time when they were placing the sign. There's no trees anywhere in that shot.
Jeez.
And so, you know, places that we consider today to be like Bigfoot hotbeds, for a time at least, had been completely cleared of trees, now it's made that much of a comeback. It's Ohio seems to be continually changing.
I want to talk about mystery kangaroos, which I can't talk about this without talking about Lauren Coleman and his research into this. And specifically, it's not a historical case, but the Enfield horror is I think Lauren himself considers that a part of the phantom kangaroo phenomenon, because of the strange descriptions, which later became much more of a primate looking creature, but initially it was described much more like a phantom kangaroo would be. But in Lauren's book Mysterious America, he writes about, before I even go into that, in the 70s there was a huge rash of sightings in Chicago of phantom kangaroos, and around Chicago of phantom kangaroos, and it went on for like 2 weeks where all sorts of people were claiming to see kangaroos. But there are older articles than this. I just can't find any. So I went to Lauren's book because I couldn't find any of there are newspaper articles from the 1800s detailing kangaroo sightings in America. During the summer of 1941, Reverend Marsh Harpole was hunting squirrels along the Gum Creek bottom near Mount Vernon. I think this is Illinois. Yeah, Mount Vernon, Illinois. I got confused. My dad just called me on my phone that I'm looking at. When a large animal that looks something like a baboon leaped out of a tree and walked upright toward the startled hunter, Harpole in turn struck the creature with his barrel and then frightened it away by firing a couple of shots into the air. In the months that followed this incident, rural families would report hearing terrifying screams at night in the wooded bottomlands along the creeks. Hunters sometimes found mysterious tracks. By early spring of the next year, after the killing of a farm dog near Bonnie, large parties of volunteers, some with rifles and shotguns, others with nets and ropes, scoured the creek bottoms. But the creature easily evaded them, perhaps because of its reputed ability to leap from 20 to 40 feet in a single bound, and in fact appeared as much as 40 or 50 miles from the location of the original sighting in Jackson and Elkhaw counties. Finally, it disappeared and was not seen again, for a time at any rate. The Hoosier folklore concluded, after 25 years, a coon hunter from Hecker one night heard a strange beast screaming up ahead on Prairie to Dulong Creek. Hunters chased this phantom from time to time all winter. Their dogs would get the trail, then lose it, and they would hear it screaming down the creek in the opposite direction. It was that kind of creature. You'd hear it up creek, but when you set out in that direction, you'd hear it a mile down creek. He goes on, and then eventually it leads into the Enfield horror stuff. But that's from Lauren's Mysterious America look. But like I said, there were so many reports, and I was frustrated I couldn't find them in time to talk about it. So maybe we can do it. I'd like to do an episode about phantom kangaroos because it's so silly. There's literally a report I read where one of the phantom kangaroos punches someone in the face. And like, I got to find that so we can tell all
perfect.
That. Yeah, it's exactly what you want to hear about.
I'll never forget like reading Mysterious America for the first time, and there's a photo in there of a phantom kangaroo like standing in a field.
Yes, I just saw that tonight.
And it's as a kid, that just blew my mind. You know, I was like, it's one thing to read about it, but then to see a picture that kind of corroborates the story, it's like, wow, you know, that what there's something out there.
Yeah.
And close to where I live. It's really weird. Let's see. This one I thought was pretty cool. This was from Kansas to the northwest of Arkansas. Many of the inhabitants of the Arcadia Valley in Crawford County saw a wild man or gorilla. Remember that this report of 1869 was made at a time when Bigfoot was unheard of. And so Mr. Trimble's description is unlikely to have been influenced by other sighting reports. And says several times, it has approached the cabins of settlers much to the terror of women and children, especially if the men happen to be absent working in the fields. In one instance, it approached the house of one of our old citizens but was driven away with clubs by one of the men. It has so near a resemblance to the human form that the men are unwilling to shoot it. It is difficult to give a description of this wild man or animal. It has a stooping gait, very long arms with immense hands or claws. It has a hairy face, and those who have been near it describe it as having a most ferocious expression of countenance. Generally walks on its hind legs, but sometimes on all fours. The beast, or quote-unquote, what is it, is as cowardly as it is ugly, and it is next to impossible to get near enough to obtain a good view of it. The settlers, not knowing what to call it, have christened it Old Chef. Since its appearance, our fences are often found down, allowing the stock free range in our cornfields. I suppose Old Chef is only following his inclination, as it may be easier for him to pull them down than to climb over. However, as it is, curses loud and deep are heaped upon its head by the settlers. The settlers are divided in opinion as to whether it belongs to the human family or not. Probably it will be found to be a gorilla or large orangutan that has escaped from some menagerie in the settlements east of here. At one time, over 60 of the citizens turned out to hunt it down, but it escaped. It probably owed to the fright that it received, it kept out of sight for several days, and just as the settlers were congratulating themselves, they were rid of an intolerable nuisance, Old Chef came back again, seemingly as savage as ever. If this meets the eye of any showman who has lost one of his collection of beasts, he may know where to find it. At present, it is the terror of all women and children in the valley. It cannot be caught, and nobody is willing to shoot it.
So
I like the nuisance angle of that, you know, that it's just sort of being reported.
Yeah.
That's this nuisance creature, and we'd rather be rid of it, and there's just no... There doesn't seem to be any sensational aspect to that account at all.
Yeah, I mean, wild man reports from that era, they change... Like, we've talked about it before, but you have the very, like, what sounds like the Jolly Green Giant or something running around the forest. But then you've got, like, where it rings much more like an animal, like some sort of animal that's like you said, like a nuisance to the local farmers mm-hmm. and stuff like that. I've always thought that was really interesting. I've got one called a monster serpent of Mexico. Unfortunately, I don't have in front of me the details on when this story appeared, but I'm sure I can find it. I think this is very early 1900s. I'm running back through my photos right now. Let me see. It's gone. Just literally has disappeared. Okay, so I don't have the date, but let's say late 1800s. A monster serpent of Mexico, the San... I don't even know how to say this word. The San Marcial County has been considerably aroused from time to time by the conflicting reports of Mexicans who say that the extinct crater, which I love, by the mm-hmm. way, the fact that this is... possibly an alien snake, to the east of the plain known as the Jornado del Muerto, Hornado del Muerto, about 25 miles from this place, is the abode of a monster serpent. second in size only to that huge reptile of the seas that has so often been spoken of by mariners and others. It is reported by some to be fully 100 feet in length. This guy would devour the peninsula python. Yeah. reported by some to be fully 100 feet in length and about 2 feet in circumference. Those dimensions are weird.
Mm-hmm.
That's the skinniest long snake.
Yeah.
But probably the most trustworthy information is that given by a Mr. Alexander, who possesses some mining property in the San Andreas Mountains, which lie to the east of the Broad Plain. Mr. Alexander says that he saw the serpent once while crossing the Hornado on the way to his mines. He was about halfway across the plain, jogging leisurely along behind his burrow, dreaming of the immense wealth that he hoped to realize from his property, when suddenly the burrow stopped, erected its long ears, wheeled quickly around, and made a mad stampede in the opposite direction. Mr. Alexander was at a loss to account for the strange freak of the burrow and was about to start in pursuit of the runaway when he chanced to look ahead. Then his eyes gazed upon the monster. He was so beside himself with fear at first, he says, that his nerves were completely paralyzed. His hair stood on end, and move he could not. He was rooted to the spot, and his eyes were fixed upon the serpent. It was about a quarter of a mile from him and was traveling in the opposite direction toward the crater. He says it appeared to be about 60 feet in length, but what surprised him most was the queer proportions of the creature. The foreparts were of enormous size, its head being fully as large as a barrel. A few feet behind the creature's head, two large scales were visible, which glittered in the sun like polished shields. Further back were two huge claws on either side about 2 feet apart, which were all the monster had in the shape of feet. The rest of the body was comparatively small and tapering to the end of the tail. It traveled at a rapid gait, sometimes rearing its whole body from the ground and walking on its four claws. If you're picturing this in your head, it's hilarious.
Yeah.
He watched it till it disappeared over a little hill, and then he started to look after his burrow. The Mexicans have the most deadly fear of the crater and will not venture within miles of it, there being a popular tradition among them that it is the abode of some terrible serpent. The Mexicans assert that on one occasion a descent of the crater was made by three men, and as none of them returned, it was generally believed they were devoured by the monster. Got to get more information on that article, like when it was found and stuff. It's frustrating. So again, I don't have the dates on that, but I do want to say that one's like late 1800s. Let's just go with
1893. The barrel-headed monster. The
barrel-headed, four-clawed monster.
That's
it
kind
of sounds like Jabba the Hutt, like with a longer tail. That's essentially what they're describing.
Yeah, in a crater.
Yeah, in a crater. Yep, monster.
Wow.
Yep.
This is a real short one, but it's late April 1897. A wild man was seen in the woods near Stout, Ohio, which is also now, it's near the town of Rome. I looked it up, and it's down west of Portsmouth, so way south. 30 armed men hunted it, presumably unsuccessfully, since we have no report of a capture, after it had attacked a boy. One witness said it was very tall, almost naked, and could run like a deer. Another said it wore a pair of tattered pants. And Janet and Colin Board continue, lest this last feature suggest that the wild man really was that, rather than a Bigfoot, we note that we have details of 6 other sightings in which an apparent Bigfoot wore clothes, all relatively recent sightings apart from the Deep Creek Man-Beast of 1894, and we shall give more details in the appropriate chapters.
I've got another one here, and this was a Boston Globe article from, I want to say this is the early 1900s, but again, I don't have my dates. But this is a very large, like huge, it's a full page article on sea monsters. But the cool thing is they break it down into like little stories, like vignettes. And so I grabbed the entire page, and then I can just go through some of these. Sea serpent attacking a vessel. By the way, these all have, I should post this. I say this every time we do a show, but I should post this on our Facebook page because there's photos and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
In 1734, Bishop Eged or Egedi in his little work entitled Full and Particular Relation of My Voyage to Greenland as a Missionary, tells of a remarkable sea monster sighted during the voyage. He says, on July 6th, 1734, when off the south coast of Greenland, a sea monster appeared to us whose head was raised, when raised, was on a level with our main... Sorry, this is difficult to read because everything's so... Let me start over. On July 6, 1734, when off the south coast of Greenland, a sea monster appeared to us whose head, when raised, was on a level with our main top. Its snout was long and sharp, and it blew water almost like a whale. It had broad paws. Its body was covered with scales. Its skin was rough and uneven, and in most respects, it was a serpent. When it dived, its tail, which was raised in the water, in the air, appeared to be a whole ship's length from its body. Serpent seen by Bishop Egedi in 1734, and they have an awesome picture of it. Some years later, Bishop Egedi, in his new survey of Old Greenland, speaks of the same monster, saying its body was as thick round as the ship he sailed in. Mr. Charles Gould, later referring to this statement, compares the monster to the Liassic saurians, of which it might be a surviving descendant. Bishop Pontoppidan of Bergen in the Natural History of Norway, published in 1755, devotes a large portion of his celebrated work to the sea serpent and gives numerous incidents of its having been seen. Among them is the statement made to him by Captain Lawrence de Ferry of the Norwegian Navy, an official report of which is now in the Admiralty Office in Stockholm. Captain de Ferry says that in 1746, he put into Jule Nefs and saw a large serpent swimming in the water. He put off in a boat to pursue it, but being unable to come up to it, shot at it, wounding the serpent in the neck. The latter sank, making the water red with blood. The snake was of a grayish color, the mouth being large and black, while the eyes were most ferocious looking. Besides the head, which was out of the water, 8 coils were counted, separated about a fathom apart. It was very thick and, to all appearances, about 150 feet long. Bishop's Pontoppidan, Bishop Pont, gives quite an exhaustive account of the serpent's habits. He says those that frequent Norwegian waters, differ from the ones seen near Greenland, the former having a smooth skin almost devoid of the scales that distinguish the latter. The Norway snake generally remains in the bottom of the sea, but in very calm weather comes to the surface. It does not, like the eel or land snake, taper gradually to a point, but the body, which is almost the size of 2 hogsheads, grows remarkably small just where the tail begins. The heads of all the serpents seen have a high and broad forehead, but on some a pointed snout, while on others it is flat like a cow, the nostrils being covered with stiff hair like a seal. The eyes are large and of a dark blue color, while the body is of a dark brown or muddy gray, variegated with light streaks or spots, very shiny in appearance. There are so many reports in here. Captain Peter McQuay of the British frigate Daedalus on August 5th, 1848 at 5 p.m. saw in latitude 24.44 south and longitude 9.22 east off the African coast an enormous serpent with its head about 4 feet above the water steering directly for the ship. It passed within 3 lengths of the ship and was seen by all. 60 feet of the animal rested on the surface, and by the ripples in its wake showed it to be much longer. Its color was a dark brown with a yellowish white about the throat. It had no fins, but something like the mane of a horse, or maybe a bunch of seaweed washed around its neck. A drawing was made of the serpent. Captain McQuaid filed a report of the serpent signed by his officers, with the Admiralty Department in London. It goes, I mean, there's so many reports in here. We could have done an entire episode on this one article. So cool. There's like piece after piece in it.
What's impressive about those is how detailed the descriptions are.
Yeah, and if you want to see the illustrations and stuff, I need to find the entire, because that's not even the whole page. I just grabbed part of it so I could pull some of the accounts from there. It's mostly about sea serpents, but it does go into, there's a piece about like giant squid and kraken, which, by the way, I spent some time this morning because I was hoping I would come up with some stuff about the kraken. But what was interesting about the Kraken is that, like, those stories originated in I think that also is Norway. I think there's the initial, like, Kraken stories in the modern era, as far as, like, late 1800s, early 1900s up to today, that originated around that area with all these sea captains and fishermen mm-hmm. and stuff like that claiming to have encountered massive, massive squids in the water. But they have poetry about it. There's a piece of a book that talks about how you know the Kraken is around because the water becomes shallow and that's its head coming up. It's mm-hmm. it's really cool. And I've always been a big fan of that the Kraken anyway, which is why the second Pirates of the Caribbean is my favorite. but yeah.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah, I mean, from having the, you know, cryptozoology thing still fresh in our minds mm-hmm. from the conference, it's that level of detail is really compelling. I mean, they got fairly good looks at these things to be able to notice, like, nose hairs.
They're giving
and
exact
stuff.
Exact yeah. locations where things were taking place, right. to, like, longitude and latitude yeah. as to where it happened.
Yeah.
Which, if that was an actual account of a sea captain, makes sense because they would have to report mm-hmm. everything,
yeah.
document everything happening.
Yeah. Having just been through here, I thought it was cool that there was a report from the Green Mountains of Vermont in October 1879. Old stories were recalled when two young men hunting in the mountains south of Williamstown saw a wild man. They described it as being about 5 feet high, resembling a man in form and movement, but covered all over with bright red hair and having a long, straggling beard and with very wild eyes. When first seen, the creature sprang from behind a rocky cliff and started for the woods nearby. When mistaking it for a bear or other wild animal, one of the men fired, and it is thought wounded it, for with fierce cries of pain and rage, it turned on its assailants, driving them before it at high speed. They lost their guns and ammunition in their flight and dared not return for fear of encountering the strange being. And the commentary continues on. It says, the reader will already have noticed that a high proportion of Bigfoot sightings were made in the old days by hunters and prospectors, that is, people whose business took them into rarely visited wilderness areas. Today, that is still the case, but with the gradual encroachment on such areas by human settlements, more sightings are made by ordinary people in their own backyards.
You know, like, in all my time looking into this type of stuff, like, the thing that always comes back to me is that that we've been doing this forever. Like, people have been documenting reports of monsters going back centuries and probably further. And a lot of the modern day, like, tabloids and website, like, we call it fake news, people get angry about it and blah, blah, but it's been going, like, this kind of stuff has been going on forever. And sometimes it's believable and sometimes it's not even remotely believable or plausible, like microscopic black helicopters. But but it's been going on for centuries.
Yeah. You know what I thought is this report especially is talking about a 5 foot creature. I just wonder how much of our perception is colored by what we're supposed to think a Bigfoot is. You know, like, today it's just so standard to say 7 foot, 8 foot. Is that true? I mean, there's sort of a famous Monster Quest episode where Joe Nickel has people drive by various cutouts of Mothman,
the Mothman, yeah,
to judge their perception about how big that the things were. And, you know, people have varying opinions on an exercise like that. But I thought it was interesting that everybody overestimated, typically, I mean, the size of what they saw.
Yeah.
And I just wonder how much of that plays into today when people see something weird by the road or what have you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're almost trained at this point to think, well, Bigfoot's 7 feet tall. But I like these older reports where it's, you know, if it's 3 or 4 feet tall or 5 feet tall, that's just what we'll call it.
Yeah.
And there's not a sense of inflation of the size of these things.
Black Forge Coffee House, July 19th. Come see us and meet us in PA at Monster Bash, too, and or the Pennsylvania Bigfoot Camping Adventure. We're doing more in PA this year than Ohio. But yeah, we'll be back next week. Catch us then. Leave us a rating, review, iTunes. We're on Facebook, Twitter, email, monsteropolismail@gmail.com. We'll get to email next week. Thanks, guys.
Monsteropolis is proudly presented on Wadsworth Community Radio 97.1 FM or streaming live at wadsworthcommunityradio.com. It is proudly underwritten by Thurber's Jewelers on the Square in downtown Wadsworth.